it's a sentimental day for me. My mom passed a little over a year ago, and that void in my life, it's amazing. I tell Ellen, sometimes it's harder 6 months, 12 months down the road, you know, than it was even in the immediate part of it, and that was great enough. But you just have maybe a sense of how much they've invested in your life and how good it's been. Elton Trueblood, one of my favorite writers, he was a longtime professor at Earlham College and prolific writer for the faith. And he has this line, he says, "The true meaning of life is to plant trees under whose shade we may never sit." Let me read that again. "The true meaning of life is to plant trees under whose shade we may never sit." You know, it's amazing to me that mothers do this on a pretty continual basis. You see, what we don't realize is that this is so much bigger than us, and we talked a little bit about it with Eric and Jana, but the reality is that moms invest in their children so that their children will invest in their children, and their children will invest in their children, and their children will invest. And what they're doing is investing in planting trees whose roots will go really deep in a way that they will be blessings to other people. Now, I want you to know that really Trueblood is talking more here about you and I living life in a way that we understand that one of our callings as believers is that we live in a way that we benefit and we bless others. In fact, the title of the teaching today is Learning How to Live in Order to Bless and to Benefit. And so we read about this that sometimes the Bible informs us that folks forget about this. Honestly, sometimes they kind of lose themselves along the journey, and it is because they have a pursuit of more. And it may not be more blessing to other folks, it may be more for themselves. But in their allure for more, they have forgotten that there is more to life than just having. And Paul speaks to that in 1 Timothy 6. And we're going to use several of his phrases today as we teach. We're going to go through the scriptures and understand what Paul is talking to us about if we're going to learn to live life in a way that blesses and benefits other people. Now, first, Paul tells us you and I need to take hold of contentment. Now, contentment's a word that we use a lot. Well, it's nice to have contentment. But Paul is using it in a different way. Listen to what he says. But godliness, notice how he phrases this. But godliness actually is a means of great gain when accompanied by contentment. For we have brought nothing into the world, so we cannot take anything out of it either. If we have food and covering, with these we shall be, notice Paul's words, content. Now, Paul flips this word, to be honest with you. He redefines it in this passage. This passage, the word for contentment in the Greek was used by the Stoic philosophers. And what it meant was that a person that comes to total self-reliance. It means that there is a place where you just say, life is all about me, and I am able to provide and make happen what I need to happen. It was totally about self-sufficiency. But Paul flips this word in this passage. And he uses this word not to be about self-sufficiency, but about, he brings a Christian twist to it, if you will. He begins to speak to us about contentment is about our faith being lived out. Paul says it's about godliness, bringing contentment. It wasn't about self-bringing contentment, but it was about godliness bringing to us the blessing, he calls it, of contentment. And what he means by that is we define a value system that we're going to use for our lives. And he's saying that our lives as believers should be marked by a value system that goes along with the Christian faith. And so he's speaking here about you and I choosing a value system. Now we're saying we're all in value system, smalu system. I want you to know there's no person in this place that doesn't have a value system that guides your life. Honestly, if you and I were to look at your checkbook over the last 6 months, I can tell you what you value. Because we invest in what we value. If you want to look at the relationships around you, you can tell if those are valuable to you. You see, you and I are literally defined by the value system that we live our lives according to. And Paul is telling us that if we want to have contentment, then we must come to some place where we understand that the value of our faith and the values lived out of our faith need to be that which guides our lives. And he says, Paul says, when you do this, you not only find godliness where you're living out your faith, but you find in that the value of your faith and contentment. Listen to Paul's words in Philippians 4. And Paul talks about his journey towards contentment. He says, I'm not saying this because I am in need, for I have learned to be content whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation. Now notice what he says, I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or want. And this is Paul's remedy. This is Paul's definition to how he has come to contentment. He said, I can do everything through Jesus Christ who gives me strength. You see, what Paul has learned is that contentment is totally based on Christ-centeredness and Christ-sufficiency, not self-centeredness and self-sufficiency. He says there's something that happens when you and I take our faith and begin to build our lives upon it. We begin to grow in our faith to a place where we understand that Jesus is trustworthy. He says contentment equals Christ sufficiency. He's literally saying contentment is all about developing a trust and a total dependence on the faithfulness of Jesus. Now, I want to tell you, it's so funny to me that sometimes we have to travel different places to understand Christ's sufficiency in different ways. Now, what I mean by that is, if any of you have ever traveled to a third world country and you met believers there, you will find out instantaneously that their faith is not dependent on what they have because they have very little. I remember one time we were at this third world country where we're building a church there, and we got invited to go up into the mountains. So we made our way to the mountains. It's part of the probably the poorest area of this whole country. And we were invited. We had church. We had a worship service there. And afterwards, we were invited to a home that we could have lunch in. Now, I want to tell you the reason that we had lunch in this home. It was the only home on the mountain, only home on the mountain that had an indoor toilet. And I'm telling you, that was big time. I mean, absolutely big time. In fact, before we could have lunch, we all had to go tour the bathroom, watch it work. I mean, it was just this most amazing thing. And then when we sat down to eat that day, we noticed as we had all week long, we had the same meal every meal. We had rice and beans. But on this day, friends, they made for us, each one of us got one chicken leg and one fish. And I'll tell you the things that I noticed about the chicken and the fish. That had to be the best shaped chicken I've ever seen in my life because he had to run a long ways to get that skinny. There's no doubt in my mind. The other thing about it is the fish was served on a platter and they had the eyeball in the fish. I'll never forget this. And no matter how I turned my plate, that fish was still looking at me. I'll never forget that. It was just the most amazing thing. But the thing that amazed me the most about it all was the joy in the lives of these people who had very little. You see, their contentment came from them living out their faith in such a way that they had a Christ dependency and a Christ sufficiency that they lived out. Paul said, I can do everything through Christ who gives me strength. Now notice what he says, because Paul wants us to make sure about something. Paul wants us to understand it's not about the stuff in this world. It's amazing how we can get enamored with stuff. Listen to what he says. He says, we have brought nothing into the world, so we can take nothing out of it. Now, I want you to know the Bible makes this point over and over. Go back to Ecclesiastes 5, and this is what the writer says. We all come to the end of our lives, naked and empty-handed, as on the day we were born. And notice what he says. We will never take our riches with us. Job 1:21 says, I came naked from my mother's womb, and I will be naked when I leave. The Lord gave me what I had, and the Lord has taken it away. And then this is what Job says, praise the name of the Lord. Now, we know he had great loss. Do you think that Job understood sufficiency in his faith? Absolutely. That even in the midst of great anguish and hurt, he says, and I praise the name of the Lord. Psalm 49:17 says, for when they die, they take nothing with them. Their wealth will not follow them to the grave. You see, friends, the Bible wants us to understand, and I want to make something perfectly clear. Paul here is reminding us that you and I will touch nothing this week. Please hear me. You and I will touch nothing this week, nor in the days to come that is not temporary. Not one thing. Not one thing that we touch on this earth will make its way to eternity with us. And what he is saying is, don't let your contentment be based on having or not having. Let it be based on those eternal things, and please hear me, that have a shelf life much larger and much longer than anything you and I will ever touch or hold today or tomorrow. I'm telling you, Paul is saying to us, contentment comes with godliness, which leads us to Christ's sufficiency. Now, Paul now gives us a caution. He gives us an instruction, but now he gives us a caution. And this is a caution to those of us who don't have great means. And he's offering us a caution. He's not talking here about people who are wealthy. He's talking about people here who want to be wealthy really badly. And he offers us a caution because, in fact, in this part of the passage, in this part of the passage in Timothy, the language used here is unbelievably strong. It's kind of, if you will, passionate. Paul's not laissez-faire about this teaching. Paul is very direct and he's pointed. It's a way for Paul to share his passion about this. And this is what he says. But those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare. And notice what he says. In result of that, many foolish and harmful desires which plunge people into ruin and destruction. Paul's not speaking very fondly of it, is he? He says, for the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil, and some by longing for it have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. Now let's just walk through some of these phrases. He says, those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare. Now what he's talking about is that if we have such a desire, what it does, if we don't watch out, it will place us in very vulnerable positions. It will make us susceptible, if you will, to compromise our values in order to try to gain a little more. You ever been tempted to do that on your taxes? Okay. You see, he says we have the capacity to fall prey. He calls it a snare. It's a trap that an animal falls into. And I'm going to ask you this question. How do people set traps for animals? They put food in them. Why? Because their appetite is so strong, it's almost an insatiable desire to fill their hunger that they will place themselves in danger to get there. And Paul's saying, I want you to know, if you don't watch out, if you fall in love with having too much, if you are so moved, so driven by, I'm going to have more and have more and have more, Paul says, I want you to know your insatiable desire can cause you to be placed in a very dangerous and compromising place. He says the result of that is many foolish and harmful desires. Now this word foolish is a word that means we make senseless choices. Now, honestly, if you put it point blank, it means that we can have the tendency, if we don't watch out, to just be stupid. And what did Forrest Gump say? Stupid is stupid does. And what he's saying here, Paul says, I want you to know, there's sometimes, have you ever looked back in your life and you found yourself in a financial place that wasn't very promising and wasn't very easy, and you looked back and you just simply said this, how could we have been so stupid? That's exactly what Paul's talking about. Paul is talking about our overriding desires can sometimes, let's be honest, cloud our vision. Leads us to poor financial decisions. And Paul says they're not just senseless. He says they're harmful. He said they're foolish and they're harmful desires. It means, the word translates, it means destructive. They will destroy your life. Now, I'm going to tell you, being very vulnerable, probably 25 years ago, it may have been longer than that, sweetie, that I call Ellen my wife, sweetie. It's not anybody else here. Sorry, Kip, I didn't want you to get nervous. I won. The truth of the matter is, at some point we had a person that was a dear friend of ours, came to us, told us about a new upstart.com company, and told us about the potential of investing early on. You ever heard this? Early on, get in on the ground floor. And we did. We invested. We lost every bit of it. And you want to know why? Because our vision of gaining and having everything honestly led to us to make a stupid decision. And we paid for that. You see, Paul says harmful desires, and notice what he says, which plunge people into ruin and destruction. This is, the word plunge is the Greek word used for a sinking ship. And what he's saying is, if you don't watch out, you can get in so much debt, you will take on so much water, you can't bail it out fast enough. You ever heard the phrase, drowning in debt? This is where it comes from. That we literally make decisions that put us in such a vulnerable place that we have the potential to lose everything in order for us to try to have everything. And then Paul uses really probably the most quoted, one of the most quoted and one of the most misquoted scriptures in the verse. It says, for the love of money, now notice what he says, for the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil, and some by longing for it have wandered away from the faith. Please notice something. He says, is a root. He says it's not. Many people quote it and says, for the love of money is the root of all evil. It's not what he says. It says, for the love of money is a root of evil. And some by longing for it have wandered away from the faith. You see, Paul's not saying money is bad. Listen, friends, money has a capacity to do great good, but it also has the ability to bring great harm. The problem's not money. What the problem is when our love for things and money grows to such a degree that it limits mine and your ability to make really wise, conscious decisions with our resources. I mean, have you ever heard the phrase, we need to learn how to manage our resources? I'll tell you what I find out with so many people is their resources manage them. They don't manage their resources. And what Paul is saying here is that you and I can get to an insatiable place where more is so attractive to us that we lose sight of what really matters in this world and can put us in a really difficult place. He says, and some by longing have even wandered away from the faith. That word longing, do you know what it is? It means to lust. It means to lust after something so much that it causes us to make decisions that cause us to begin to follow a value system that is not about our faith, it's about the world. And Paul says here, I want to tell you something. Sometimes by longing and lust, and for instance, I want to tell you, lust is a powerful thing. If you don't think so, ask somebody who's struggled with sexual addictions. And the power of lust. And Paul says that same type of lust can happen to us when it comes to our resources and wanting to have more. Now listen, it's such an important thing here because what we have to understand is that place can put us in a place that it clouds our judgment, it can cause us to compromise, it can cause us to rationalize our values. Ultimately, it can lead us, Paul says, even away from the faith. I want to read you a passage that Jesus says in Luke 12. And listen to the words Jesus begins with, and then I want you, if you will, to listen very intently to the words He ends with. Then Jesus said to them, watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. And He told them this with the parable, the ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. Now listen, he was already blessed. He was already probably wealthy. But this is what he thought to himself. What shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. Instead of sharing them with other people, he's going to hoard them. He's going to store them up. This is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns. I'll build bigger ones. And I will store my surplus grain. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Now take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, you fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? And notice what Jesus says. This is how it will be for whoever stores up things for themselves but is not rich towards God. Wow. What a powerful passage of Jesus is saying, listen to me. It's more important that you understand about godliness and how you use your resources than it is for you to just simply have more resources so it causes you to hoard them. You see, friends, Jesus is telling us that our faith and the kingdom need to be a part of the equation in how we utilize our resources. And again, I remind you, this language is so strong. And one of the things that Paul just wants to warn us of, don't put yourself in a place where it causes you to even question or compromise or rationalize your faith and values in order to have more. You see, I want to tell you, one of the questions that you and I want to stay away from is this: are we depending more on what we have, or are we dependent on God? And Paul says, when you come to one of those places, when you come to a crossword where you have to ask that question, you're in a really, really vulnerable spot. Now, Paul gives us some advice to follow. How am I doing on time? I'm gonna go quickly. And he gives us three action words. Notice what he says in verse 11 and 12. But flee from these things. Pursue righteousness. Fight the good fight of faith. And notice what he says. And hold on to eternal life. He gives us four action words that he wants to talk to us about. He first tells us to flee. It means to run from. It says, if you put yourself in a vulnerable position or a questionable place and you realize this, what Paul is saying is get the heck out of Dodge. Flee. He tells us to run away from. The next word, he tells us to run to something. He says, but pursue righteousness and godliness and your faith and love and perseverance and gentleness. Amazing, isn't it? He's telling us to run from some things, but run to some others. And then Paul gets more directive. He says, and fight the good fight of faith. The phrase means that you know you're going to have some skirmishes in the ongoing journey of life. And who of us have not had skirmishes where the enemy puts up roadblocks, where we get into difficult situations or we go through struggles? This is exactly what Paul is talking about when he talks to us about putting on the full armor of God. He says, don't go into this naive. Don't think you're going to pass through this life in your faith without some trials, without some tribulations, without some troubles. So he's telling us, fight the good fight. And then notice what he says. And then take hold of the eternal life to which you were called. Now what Paul is talking about here is literally Paul is saying that you and I need to take hold of the rope of faith, and we need to spend a lifetime pulling ourselves towards Jesus. He said, and there's going to be moments where it's tough, and there's moments where it's difficult. There's some moments we can just do this. But I want to tell you, friends, there's those moments when we have to buckle down, and we have to pull, and we have to commit ourselves. Paul says, take hold of. This word means to clasp as if your life depends on it. Paul says, do all this because, and notice what he says, you made the good confession in the presence of many witnesses. You know what he's talking about there? He's talking about what we experienced 2 weeks ago when we had baptism. And when he says, on that day, you made a profession of your faith, it's like this morning in dedicating your children. It means that we have made a profession. He said, this is to remind you who you are. You're people of God. He said, act like it. Hold on to it. Make it the thing that anchors you. And then finally, Paul says, do good. Listen to what he says. In verses 17 and 19, he's speaking to all of those people who have means. Now, some of you just shut me off because you say, well, I don't have that many means. Listen, in Paul's eyes, if you had 3 meals a day, clothes on your back, and a roof over your head, you're rich. And friends, if you've ever traveled to any other countries, you will find out how unbelievably rich we are in all situations. When you have people who make $17 a year. I mean, think about that. Paul says that we are people who are rich. We've been blessed. And notice what he says. Instruct those who are rich in this present world not to be conceited or to fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches, but on God who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. Now, I want to come back to that because I love that verse. Instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is life indeed. You see, Paul has two concerns for you and me. One, that we don't become conceited, that we don't become arrogant and prideful because of what we have. And really what he's saying is, you and I should never have the opportunity that we look down on another person because we have more than them, Or we think we are better than somebody else because we have more than them. Now I'm going to ask this question. It'll filter through all this really quickly. Have you ever walked through Walmart and thought you were better than somebody else? Paul says, if you and I ever get to the place that our possessions make us think we can look down on somebody else, we are absolutely, positively dead wrong. Second thing, Paul is concerned that you and I will learn to trust in what we have more than we trust in Him. And notice what he says, godliness is great gain if it comes with contentment. And what Paul is reminding us of is going back to this phrase because he wants us to know something. Friends, this is the truth. All that we have can only be enjoyed to the ultimate if we give all that we have to the Lord, to godliness, to our faith that guides us and leads us. And then he says, he instructs us to trust in God who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. I'm going to move right through this. I love this verse. I love it. And I love it for two reasons. Number one, Paul instructs us to enjoy our blessings. Have you ever met anyone that honestly acts like if you're not miserable, you're not in the Lord's will? No, have you? Oh, we're just suffering for Jesus, but so glad that we're here. I'm going to tell you, Paul says, God blesses us. And he says he gives them to us to enjoy. He doesn't give them to be haughty. Doesn't give us to be conceited. It doesn't give us to be prideful. But he says there's a joy from what we've been blessed. And he says, utilize the joy out of this. And then the second thing he says is, who is the Lord who supplies you with all your need? And what Paul is reminding us is that God is our sustainer. God is our provider. And I want to tell you, in this consumer-driven world that we live in, church, we need to be reminded who ultimately is our provider. Because sometimes we think it's all about us. Have you ever been in a church and people ask this question, what are you going to do for me? I'm going to ask you something. Have you ever read in the New Testament where the church was set up to be about you and me? It is about how you and I come into this place and give of ourselves and our gifts and our abilities so that other people can know about Christ and the cross. So that we give ourselves. I mean, if there's any place that all of us believers should be willing to give up so somebody else can have, it's in the life of the church. Because Jesus called us to be servants. Nothing less, nothing more. But servants in the name of Christ. You see, I want you to know something. Paul says, so that you and I can take hold of that which is life indeed. See, I believe life can be full, don't you? Man, I believe life can be overflowing. Ask Ellen, I always see it that way. I believe life can have not just contentment, but wholeness in it. Because the reality of it is, He's blessed us with Him. Listen, friends, I want to give you a new truth to hold on to this week. Our lives can make a difference when we use our lives to make a difference. And it's all about realizing, I'm going to read this. We have to realize that when we give to God, we're not giving it away. We are sending it ahead. It's an investment. You see, what we give to God is all that we're ever going to keep, really. And what we take hold of, Jesus says, and hold on to, is honestly the only thing we're ever going to lose. God calls you and me to take hold of our faith to a radical obedience to Jesus. Now, Paul's not saying this requires poverty, but Paul says it does require righteousness and godliness. It does require you and I not to hoard our wealth, but to use our wealth as a means of doing good. In essence, Paul is saying, let's invest in something bigger than ourselves. In fact, if you hoard everything you have, you spend greater energy trying to protect it than you do in trying to bless others with it. I want to close with a story. There's a man named Stumpy and his wife Martha. And they always went to the state fair. And every year there was an airplane there with a pilot, and you could take a ride for $10 a person. And Martha just dreamed of flying in this plane. And she would say every year she'd go, Stumpy, I sure want to ride that airplane. He said, Martha, that airplane ride costs $10, and $10 is $10. We're not riding it. Every year they did this, and finally they come to the point. Martha steps up this day. She looks at the plane. She says, Stumpy, I'm 71 years old, and I want to ride that airplane. And he said, Martha, that airplane ride costs $10, and $10 is $10, and we're not going to ride the airplane. Well, the pilot overheard him for the 30-something year. And he said, I want to make you a deal. He said, I'm going to take both of you up for $10, but here's the thing. If you never scream or make a sound, then the airplane rides for free. And Stumpy and Martha looked at each other and thought, okay, we'll do it. So they both climb in the biplane behind the pilot and they take off. And friends, he cuts, dives, and flips, and stalls, and circles, and everything. He does it twice, and not one sound came out of the whole time. And so he's landing on the runway, and he turns around because Martha's sitting around me. He said, I'm going to tell you, I'm impressed. He said, I did everything I knew how to get you to make some noise back there, but y'all never said one word. And she said, well, I was going to say something when Stumpy fell out of the plane, but $10 is $10. That's funny, isn't it? I love that story. You see, she had to make a choice. Okay, point to the story. You and I have to make a choice. You see, the Bible so clearly tells us that you and I can't live with two lovers in our lives. That we can't love the Lord and what is it, Mammon, capital N, the God of our lives. What we have to understand, are we going to invest solely in ourselves, or are you and I going to invest in something much, much bigger, our faith and the kingdom? You see, I want to make a point, because the all-in campaign is all about the kingdom and the future of the kingdom for Catalyst. It is about you and I sacrificing so that other folks can come to know Him, plain and simple. It is about you and I just simply praying before Him and saying, Lord, what can I do with what I have to bless You and bless others? And what I'm hoping and what I'm praying is this, that you and I will invest together for the future of Jesus. You see, what I'm really hoping is that you and I will learn in this whole journey how to plant trees under whose shade we may never sit. Because when Carl talks about in the video about that place of legacy, that's what he's talking about. He's talking about you and me investing in something bigger than us that has a shelf life longer and larger than us. And it's called the kingdom of God. And that, my friends, let's learn to live our lives in a way that blesses and benefits others through the kingdom and through our generosity. Our generosity. Amen and amen.